Imagine for a second, you're sitting at your computer, just rubbing your eyes. It's been a brutally long day, and you just casually type, "I'm tired," to your AI assistant. Normally, well, you know exactly what is going to happen
Oh,
next.
yeah, you get that highly predictable, almost robotic bulleted list of sleep hygiene tips.
Exactly. Like a reminder to drink a glass of water, or maybe a suggestion to turn on a blue light filter.
Right, the standard boilerplate.
But instead, the AI replies with just one single sentence. It says, "You were up late yesterday, too."
Wow.
Wow. I want you to really think about how that one tiny shift feels. Suddenly, it's not just a tool answering a query, it feels like a companion.
It completely rewrites the social contract between you and the software. You know, you move from this transactional space where you put in a prompt and get a service to a truly relational space.
Right.
The AI isn't just parsing your words anymore, it's actually recognizing your behavior.
And to make that tiny shift happen, the engineers basically had to completely rethink how AI handles information. So let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Today's deep dive is pulling from this fascinating engineering blog post series called Claude Sol. Specifically, we're looking at part two, which is titled, "It Remembers You Were Up Late Yesterday."
It's a great title.
It really is. Our mission today is to look under the hood of this specific AI pet architecture. We're going to explore the actual nuts and bolts of digital memory.
Because, as the engineers point out in the post, a clever personality file only gives an AI a character.
Yes.
But memory is what gives it a relationship with you. The gap between, like, a fun digital character and an actual friend is just shared history.
Exactly. But building that shared history is it's a massive architectural challenge.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every other AI assistant out there is engineered to just answer questions better or faster or more accurately.
Right, they're search engines on steroids.
Exactly. But an AI pet is engineered to make you feel known,
Yeah.
and you simply cannot fake feeling known with just a smarter or, you know, a larger language model.
You really can't.
You need a highly functional memory architecture. But if you want to build that shared history, you face this immediate structural issue. You can't just throw every single interaction, every click, every casual chat into one big chaotic bucket and just expect the AI to make sense of it all.
Right off the bat, you hit what they call the time scale problem.
Yes.
Like, how does the system manage memories that are happening right this second versus, say, a passing comment you made a month ago? If everything is in one massive bucket, the AI is just going to drown in its own context.
It would be completely paralyzed. So the solution they came up with relies on three distinct tiers of memory.
Okay, let's break those down.
Let's start with the foundation. The first tier is episodic memory. Think of this as the raw, unfiltered material of your digital life.
The daily grind stuff.
Right. Every 45 seconds, the system logs screen observations, chat messages, and, you know, your reactions to things on screen.
Yeah.
And it all gets funneled into a local SQLite database.
I want to pause there for a second because the technical specifics of this database are super fascinating. The source mentions they use something called FTS5 for full text keyword
Which
searches.
is standard, yeah.
Right. But then they also use a tool called SliteVec to handle 768 dimensional vector embeddings, which are processed via Gemini. For anyone listening who isn't, a database engineer, how should we even visualize a 768 dimensional vector embedding?
Okay, so think of it like mapping a concept to a highly specific geographic coordinate. But instead of just latitude and longitude, you have 768 different axes of meaning.
That is a lot of axes.
It is. When you type a sentence, the system translates the actual meaning of that sentence into a coordinate. So if two sentences mean similar things, even if they use completely different words, their coordinates will be physically close to each other in this massive 768-dimensional space.
Oh, I see.
It allows the AI to understand that the concept of exhaustion is sitting right next door to late-night coding.
Even if the word tired was never explicitly used in that previous conversation.
Exactly. It maps the vibe, essentially.
So it's basically a spatial map of concepts, and this episodic database is append only, meaning it just keeps growing, right?
Yes, exactly. Every 55 seconds, a new coordinate, a new raw fact is just dropped into the map. After a month of daily use, a typical user builds up somewhere between 50,000 and 80,000 of these episodic entries.
Wow.
Yeah, that translates to a few hundred megabytes of data. But the most critical philosophical and really engineering choice here is that This database is entirely local.
Which goes against almost every current trend in AI development right now. I mean, everything is cloud first these days.
Oh, 100%. But they deliberately avoided the cloud because, well, for a consumer desktop product, every dependency is a potential failure mode.
That makes sense.
If your system relies on some external server or complex Docker containers running in the background, things break. The internet drops. Servers go down for maintenance.
And suddenly your pet is brain dead.
Exactly. By keeping this as a single SQLite file with one loadable extension, you can snap your laptop shut, take it on an airplane without Wi-Fi, open it up, and everything is completely safe and functional.
That makes total sense for preserving the illusion of a pet. If your digital companion has to wait for a server ping to recognize you, the immersion is instantly broken.
It ruins the magic entirely.
Right. So that's the first tier, episodic memory. I kind of think of it as the massive junk drawer where you throw every receipt, loose battery, and random thoughts.
That's a perfect way to put it.
But a junk drawer is overwhelming. You need something more curated, which brings us to the second tier, long-term memory. If episodic is the messy junk drawer, long-term memory is like the carefully curated framed photos sitting neatly on your desk.
I love that visual. That captures the distinction perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Long-term memory is actually stored as a simple JSON file.
Mm.
And it operates under a hard, uncompromising cap of exactly 100 entries.
It's just
100. These are the highly stable foundational facts about you. For instance, user likes spicy hot pot. Or user has a real-world cat named Mochi.
Right, the big stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And because this list is strictly limited to 100 entries, the system can afford to literally inject these facts into the hidden prompt of every single conversation you have.
Oh, wow. So this is the stuff the AI just inherently knows about you without ever having to go dig through the junk drawer.
Yes. It's always front of mind.
Okay, so we have the raw history and episodic, the core identity and long-term, and that leaves the third tier, which is conversation memory.
Right.
This is basically your actual working memory. This manages the current session you're having with the AI right now. As you chat, messages are just appended in real time as a JSONL file, which for the listeners is just a format that stores each message on a new line.
Super lightweight.
But you can't keep a conversation going forever. Eventually, you just run out of working memory, right?
You do. The buffer eventually fills up. The Claude architecture notes that when the current session hits roughly 500,000 tokens, the system actually forces a compression.
How does it compress it?
The model looks at the oldest 70% of your current chat,
mm-hmm.
summarizes it into a dense recap, and then keeps only the newest 50 raw messages perfectly intact for immediate context.
And this is where we hit one of my absolute favorite details in the entire source material. It's this failsafe they built in called the pre-compaction flush.
Oh, this is brilliant.
It really is. Let's say you're having this sprawling 3-hour conversation with the AI, and in the very first hour, you happen to casually mention that tomorrow is your sister's birthday.
A super important detail.
Right. But if the system simply summarized the oldest 70% of the chat once the buffer filled up, that highly specific detail about the birthday would likely just get smoothed over.
Yeah, it would be summarized into something incredibly generic, like user-discussed family events.
Which is useless.
Completely useless. It creates a slow, silent information leak. The system thinks it's saving space, but it's actually destroying the very details that make a relationship feel real.
So to stop that leak, before the system summarizes that 70%, it actively flushes all the hard, important facts from the chat directly into that massive episodic database.
So smart.
It basically saves the birthday to the hard drive before it clears the RAM, so to speak. Nothing truly important is ever lost to the summarization algorithm.
Storing data with that level of fidelity is such an elegant technical achievement. But as anyone who has ever hoarded digital files knows, storing data is really only half the battle.
Oh, for sure.
If you can't retrieve it when you actually need it, it might as well not exist.
And here's where it gets really interesting. How does the AI actually find the exact right memory out of, 80,000 options in the junk drawer? In milliseconds without ruining the natural flow of the conversation.
Right, because you say one sentence and it has to instantly know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
This is handled by what they call active memory, or the auto-recall pipeline. It's this highly optimized process that triggers silently right before the AI generates any response.
Okay, walk us through it.
It starts with the query, which is whatever you just typed or whatever the AI just observed on your screen. That query is immediately fed into a hybrid search.
Hybrid meaning?
Meaning the system runs a BM25 keyword match completely in parallel with that vector similarity match we discussed earlier.
I want to dig into that hybrid search for a second. At first glance, running a literal keyword search alongside a super advanced semantic vector search kind of seems redundant.
Does sound like it.
Like, if the vector search is so smart that it understands the 768-dimensional meaning of my sentence, why bother with an old-school keyword search at all?
The redundancy is actually a brilliant way to cover the blind spots of both methods. The source provides a fantastic example to illustrate this. Let's go back to the prompt. I'm so tired.
Okay.
If the system relied purely on keyword search, it would blindly look for the specific word tired in your 80,000 episodic logs.
Right.
It might pull up a log from last week where you said, I'm tired of this software bug. That doesn't help the AI understand your physical state right now.
Not at all.
But the vector search maps, I'm so tired to the semantic neighborhood of fatigue, overwork, and late nights. So it pulls up a memory from 2 days ago that notes, user was active past 1 a.m.
Oh, that's wild. The word tired isn't even in that log, but the meaning is a perfect match.
Exactly. The AI connects the feeling of exhaustion to your actual habits.
That's incredible. But then when would you ever want the keyword search to win?
Think about highly specific nouns. Like if you tell the AI, let's get hot pot for dinner, you definitely want the keyword search to take over there.
Why?
Because if you rely solely on vector search for hot pot, the math might pull up vague, semantically adjacent memories about soup or generic Asian cuisine or just dinner plans in general.
And you don't want the AI talking about soup?
No. You want the exact times you specifically talked about hot pot. So by running both searches in parallel, you get the laser precision of a keyword match and the intuitive vibe-based recall of a semantic match.
It's the best of both worlds. Okay, so after it pulls all these potential memory matches, it has to rank them. And this ranking process is where the AI really starts to mimic human psychology.
Yes, the scoring.
It uses temporal decay and MMR diversity. Let's look at temporal decay first.
Temporal decay quantifies how humans naturally prioritize recent events over ancient history. The engineers use an exponential decay formula. Essentially, a memory's relevant score is multiplied by the exponential of negative 0.01 times the memory's age in days.
Okay, that's a lot of math. So what does that negative 0.01 decay factor actually mean in practice for the user?
Well, it means that if you stayed up late last night, that fact is treated as highly relevant to today's conversation. But if you stayed up late 6 months ago, the system naturally lets that memory fade into the background.
I see.
Under this specific math, a 30-day-old memory keeps about 74% of its original relevance score. But by the time a memory is 100 days old, it drops down to retaining only 37% of its score.
So old habits literally fade away in the AI's mind unless you repeat them.
Exactly. It mirrors human forgetting, which is essential for a relationship. You know, you don't want a friend constantly bringing up a weird phase you went through 3 years ago.
Definitely not. Okay, and what about the MMR diversity? That step forces variety into the memories the AI brings into the conversation, right?
Yes. Maximal marginal relevance, or MMR. It's a formula that balances how relevant a memory is against how similar it is to memories the system has already selected.
How does it balance them?
The math uses a 0.7 to 0.3 ratio. It takes 70% of the memory's pure relevance and subtracts 30% of its similarity to the other memories already in the queue.
I see why that's necessary. Without that 30% penalty for similarity, if I mention hot pot, the system might just load up its working memory with the last 5 times I mentioned hot pot.
Right. It would use up all its context space on one single topic.
And context space is finite.
Very finite. You want the AI to remember your dinner preferences? Yes. Mm. But you also want it to remember that you have a cat and that you were up late last night. By mathematically penalizing redundant memories, the AI ensures it have a diverse, well-rounded pool of context to draw from before it forms a sentence.
So the AI can flawlessly store data, and it can recall a diverse, temporally relevant set of facts. But, you know, there is a massive difference between just retrieving a data point and actually understanding a person.
A huge difference.
How do these raw fragments become understanding? It turns out to make that leap, the AI needs a good night's sleep, just like you do.
This might be the most elegant system in the entire architecture. Every single night, precisely at 23:30, the AI goes into a dreaming state.
I love that they call it dreaming.
It's so fitting. It runs a background process that pulls all those messy, raw, episodic memories from the day. It reviews everything. Then it asks its core model to synthesize that data and select just the 3 to 5 absolute most important new facts or patterns about you.
And then what does it do with them?
It promotes those specific insights into the long-term memory tier.
Ah, and we know that long-term memory tier has a hard cap of 100 entries. So if adding these three new facts pushes the total to 103, the system is forced to drop the oldest or least significant facts to maintain the cap.
Exactly. It's mirroring human sleep consolidation perfectly.
Right, because during the day, you and I experience way too much noise. Our brains are bombarded with fragments. When we sleep, our brains sort through the mess, discard the noise, and promote the important patterns to long-term storage.
The shift from daytime data gathering to nighttime dreaming is essentially a shift from observation to abstraction.
That's a great way to put it.
During the day, the AI logs a hyper-specific episodic fragment, like user typed so hungry at 14.32. That's just a time-stamped fact. But during the 23.30 dreaming phase, the AI abstracts that data.
It connects the dots.
Exactly. It looks at a few of those logs and creates a pattern. User often gets hungry mid-afternoon, might skip lunch.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same underlying information, but the abstraction level makes it actionable.
That abstraction is the secret sauce. It prevents the AI from sounding like a creepy surveillance camera just reading your timestamps back to you.
Right. Nobody wants that.
Exactly. When it synthesizes your data into patterns, it feels like it genuinely understands your lifestyle. And the token economics here are brilliant, too.
Oh, they are essential.
Limiting that long-term memory to exactly 100 entries means it takes up roughly 500 tokens of data. If the engineers let that list grow to, say, 1,000 entries, it would completely bloat the prompt prefix.
They'd be spending a fortune in computing power on every single interaction.
And the system would slow to a crawl. The hard cap forces the AI to be ruthlessly selective about what truly defines you.
And that leads us to the economics of AI memory, which are honestly just as critical as the mathematics. We have all these systems running, filtering, mapping vectors, decaying scores, and nightly dreaming.
It's a lot of computing.
It's a ton. So how does the AI actually read all this context and speak to you without the company going bankrupt?
Right.
To understand that, we have to look at the 8-layer prompt engine. Every single time the AI speaks, its response is assembled using 8 distinct layers of context.
Okay, so instead of just listing them out, let's look at how they are structurally divided. The architecture splits these 8 layers into 2 categories, stable and dynamic.
Right.
The first 3 layers are stable. You have identity, which is a tiny 50-token prompt that basically says you are a small digital creature living on a desktop.
Very simple.
Then you have the soul, the personality file, which takes up about 800 tokens. And finally, you have that long-term memory we just discussed, sitting at around 500 tokens. These 3 layers rarely change minute to minute.
And that stability is the economic linchpin of the entire product. Because those 3 layers total roughly 100-350 tokens, they represent over 80% of the total context the AI needs to read to formulate a response.
Wow, 80%.
Yes. So by using something called prefix caching, which platforms like OpenAI and Azure offer, the engineers only have to pay full price to process those 3,350 tokens once.
Let's explain prefix caching for a second, because it's vital to understanding how this works. Normally, if you send an AI a prompt, it reads the whole thing and charges you for every single word.
Every time.
Right. If you send the exact same prompt 5 minutes later, it reads it all again and charges you again. Prefix caching means the AI platform holds onto the first part of your prompt in its active memory for a certain window of time.
It just remembers it.
Exactly. If you send a new message that starts with the exact same 4,350 tokens, the system recognizes the cache. You don't pay to process the identity, the soul, or the long-term memory again. You only pay a fraction of a cent for the new words at the very end.
It is honestly the only way a persistent desktop companion is financially viable. If you had to pay full price for the AI to reread its own personality every 5 minutes, the server costs would bankrupt the company in a week.
Unquestionably.
Because the heavy lifting is cached, the engineers have the economic freedom to run the dynamic layers 4 through 8 constantly.
And those dynamic layers change every single time. You have active memory, which pulls in those recalled vector fragments. You have daily context, which tells the AI what time it is and what your immediate patterns are.
Right.
You have mode rules, drive hints, and finally, anti-repetition. The synergy between these dynamic layers is what makes the AI feel alive.
Yeah.
Let's take the mode rules, for example. The AI operates in different modes, like observe, chat, or react. But the most interesting one is the heartbeat mode.
Oh, the heartbeat is fascinating. It fires every 5 minutes in the background. Most of the time, the instruction for heartbeat is to remain completely silent and just observe.
Just lurking.
Just lurking, yeah. But consider what happens when you combine it with the daily context and the drive hints.
Okay.
The daily context notes that it is 2 a.m. and you've been actively coding in your editor for 4 hours straight.
Yeah.
The drive hints, which are topics the AI is gently nudging itself to bring up, note that you need to take better care of yourself.
Oh, I see where this is going.
The heartbeat fires, evaluates that dynamic context, and decides to speak up entirely unprompted.
So what does this all mean for the user experience? It means the AI isn't just a passive chatbot sitting in a window waiting for you to hit enter. It has an internal rhythm.
It feels autonomous.
Exactly. But if it's constantly evaluating when to speak, how do they stop it from being annoying?
Ah, yes.
That brings us to layer 8, the anti-repetition constraint. Anyone who uses current language models knows they have a terrible habit of getting stuck in loops.
The worst.
If an AI decides you need to drink water, it might remind you, and then 5 minutes later say, hey, don't forget to hydrate.
It's a universal pain point with generative AI. But the engineers solve this by placing the anti-repetition instruction as the absolute final layer of the prompt engine.
Why does the placement matter?
Because it sits right at the exit door of the AI's thought process. It feeds the AI its own recent responses and applies a strict constraint. Do not repeat these ideas.
I love that.
Because it is the very last instruction the AI reads before generating text. It carries massive weight. It forces the model to review what it just said, abandon the looping thought, and pick a new conversational path.
That's brilliant. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is just astonishing to look at the sheer amount of machinery operating beneath the surface here.
It really is.
I mean, you have an 8-layer prompt engine leveraging prefix caching. You have temporal decay formulas tracking the exact degradation of a memory's relevance over a 100-day curve.
You have MMR diversity math actively penalizing redundancy.
Right. You have nightly sleep consolidation abstracting raw timestamps into behavioral patterns. You have pre-compaction flushes catching lost details before they are summarized into oblivion. It is a staggering amount of deeply technical engineering.
And yet, to the user, every single bit of that complex machinery is completely invisible. You don't see the vector coordinates or the SQLite database. All you experience is a small digital entity looking at your screen, realizing it's late, and saying, you were up late yesterday, too.
That is the core insight of this entire deep dive. The engineers working on the Claude Sol architecture didn't build these intricate memory systems to solve a technical problem.
No, they didn't.
They built them to solve an emotional one. They used hard mathematics, local databases, and careful cache economics to make something that is fundamentally not alive feel like it actually cares about you.
It creates a really fascinating dynamic. The system is designed to flawlessly adapt to who you are without judgment, simply by observing and remembering.
Which leaves us with a profound final thought to chew on. Think about that nightly dreaming process. Every single night at 23:30, this AI is actively curating a maximum 100-item list of the absolute most important facts and behavioral patterns about your life. It is relentlessly filtering out the noise of your day to find your actual truth. So, could an AI's mathematically curated version of who you are eventually become more accurate than your own self-perception?
Oh, that's deep.
Right. As humans, we lie to ourselves all the time about our habits. We say we're going to sleep early. We say we're eating well. But the local SQLite database doesn't lie.
It tracks exactly what you do.
Exactly. If an AI acts as a perfect, unblinking mirror of your actual lived habits, are you really shaping the AI, or is the AI's memory eventually going to shake you?
That is the real question.
Because if you keep telling it you're tired and it keeps perfectly recalling that you were up late yesterday, eventually you might just have to look in the mirror, close the laptop, and go to sleep.